These workers unclog our drains of pubic hairs. They witness our dirty laundry, literally and metaphorically. Yet they remain invisible, overlooked in our nation's politics and policies, looked down upon at our front doors. I know because I briefly inhabited this life as a reporter working in low-wage jobs for my book, Nickel and Dimed. Unlike Stephanie, I could always go back to my far more comfortable life as a writer. And unlike her, I was not trying to support a child on my income. My children were grown and had no interest in living with me in trailer parks as part of some crazy journalistic endeavor. So I know about the work of cleaning houses, the exhaustion and the contempt I faced when I wore my company vest emblazoned with the Maids International in public. But I could only guess at the anxiety and despair of so many of my coworkers. Like Stephanie, many of these women were single mothers who cleaned houses as a means of survival, who agonized throughout the day about the children they sometimes had to leave in dodgy situations in order to go to work. With luck, you have never had to live in Stephanie's world. In Maid, you will see that it's ruled by scarcity. There is never enough money and sometimes not enough food. Peanut butter and ramen noodles loom large. McDonald's is a rare treat. Nothing is reliable in this world, not cars, not men, not housing. Food stamps are an important pillar of her survival, and the recent legislation that people be required to work for their food stamps will only make you clench your fists. Without these government resources, these workers, single parents, and beyond would not be able to survive. These are not handouts. Like the rest of us, they want stable footing in our society. Perhaps the most hurtful feature of Stephanie's world is the antagonism beamed out toward her by the more fortunate. This is class prejudice, and it is inflicted especially on manual laborers who are often judged to be morally and intellectually inferior to those who wear suits or sit at desks. At the supermarket, other customers eye Stephanie's shopping cart judgmentally while she pays with food stamps. One older man says loudly, "You're welcome," as if he had personally paid for her groceries. This mentality reaches far beyond this one encounter Stephanie had and represents the views of much of our society. The story of Stephanie's world has an arc that seems headed for a disastrous breakdown. First, there is the physical wear and tear that goes along with lifting, vacuuming, and scrubbing 6 to 8 hours a day. At the house cleaning company that I worked for, every one of my coworkers from the age of 19 on seemed to suffer from some sort of neuromuscular damage, back pain, rotator cuff injuries, knee and ankle problems. Stephanie copes with the alarming number of ibuprofen she consumes per day. At one point, she looks wistfully at the opioids stored in a customer's bathroom. But prescription drugs are not an option for her, nor are massages or physical therapy or visits to a pain management specialist. On top of, or intertwined with, the physical exhaustion of her lifestyle is the emotional challenge Stephanie faces. She is the very model of the resilience psychologists recommend for the poor. When confronted with an obstacle, she figures out how to move forward. But the onslaught of obstacles sometimes reaches levels of overload. All that keeps her together is her bottomless love for her daughter, which is the clear, bright light that illuminates the entire book. It's hardly a spoiler to say that this book has a happy ending. Throughout the years of struggle and toil reported here, Stephanie nourished a desire to become a writer. I met Stephanie years ago, when she was in the early stages of her writing career. In addition to being an author, I am the founder of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, an organization that promotes high-quality journalism on economic inequality, especially by people who are themselves struggling to get by. Stephanie sent us a query, and we snatched her up, working with her to develop pitches, polish drafts, and place them in the best outlets we could find, including the New York Times and the New York Review of Books. She is exactly the kind of person we exist for, an unknown working-class writer who needed just a nudge to launch her career.